That Great Business Show. Winner, highly commended award, Irish Podcast Awards.
Welcome to episode 174 of That Great Business Show, home of great business tips, insights, and opportunities on every episode, delivered in our commute-friendly package. And it's all thanks to De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best shaving oil. Not a beard oil, it's a shaving oil. A couple of drops onto a wet face and you are sorted. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide. It's your ideal traveling companion. DeFactoShave.com.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from DeFactoShave.com.
Coming up, a man who wants to bring back apprenticeships and who also wants employers to give more credit to previous experience. And continuing our Beachhead USA mini-series, the ultimate crib sheet for those expanding into the US market, we introduce you to the World Affairs Council of Connecticut. It's a non-profit, non-partisan organization that promotes greater awareness and dialogue on important global issues, including business, and it's badly needed, methinks. We don't have one in Ireland, but you'll learn all about it. And somebody might think of doing something similar here. Now, we get so many offers of great guests for the podcast that sometimes it takes a little time for us to get those great people onto the show. Take, for example, Brian O'Donoghue, a director at Grant Thornton Ireland. He contacted me through LinkedIn back in October 2021. So it's a while ago, where he flattered me by saying he loved the show, but admitted he had also been drinking wine and hoovering whilst listening. So maybe that was the wine talking. I did warn him that drinking and hoovering was an offence. Brian is big on financial crime, governance and risk, but also has some strong views on apprenticeships, a subject dear to Team GBS's heart. He also has news of a government scheme that pays to upgrade your knowledge of fintech and others. So, new year, new job, and all of that. Lots and lots to talk about, so let's get straight into it. Brian O'Donoghue, welcome finally to That Great Business Show.
Thanks, Conal, for that very lengthy and fantastic introduction. Delighted to be here.
I love the idea of you hoovering away, probably like, from Queen doing the hoovering.
Oh, yeah, exactly. My favourite band as well.
And a glass of wine and listening to That Great Business Show. You've been doing digging because you knew you were coming on to That Great Business Show. So we'll just start with that part of it. There are schemes that nobody knows about except Brian O'Donoghue from Grant Thornton.
Correct. Well, I'm currently doing a master's in fintech and innovation. And this came because I was nerding out on a financial services strategy, which is released and updated by the Department of Finance over the last few years, given that financial services is such a huge sector here. They quite rightly concentrate on it. But I had only stumbled across this course and it occurred to me how many else people know where these courses are and how many they can get access to.
And when you say you'd stumbled upon it, how did you stumble upon it?
It was literally at the end of a report on financial services strategy for, I think it was 2023, but they have one. It's like the 2020 to 2025 strategy, and then they upgraded every year. And down at the bottom in the big long list was a master's in fintech innovation with modules that were incredibly practical for what I do and what employers would want me to do, which is the most important part.
Now, I could go off in two directions here. I could talk about your previous non-degree, because that's something I know that you want to talk about. But just to stick with this, because what else you have found since we last talked, which is only a few days ago, you've found even more of these courses.
Yeah, there's courses in blockchain, courses in compliance, and they do it through their vehicle, SkillNet, which loads of people might have heard of. And I think Skillnet are often at events I go to for work, trying to raise their own profile as well. But the Institute of Bankers as well do facilitate a lot of courses for them. And I've done one or two through the Institute, and they're fantastic. They had courses in the city headquarters and the Keys. So like, they're all accredited. This is a level 9. The reason I did it was, as we said, kind of because I come from a non-degree side of things. But this took me in because I have 20 odd years of experience at this stage. So I presume they're delighted to have me, and it's a good marker for them. But it's great to see that these courses are out there. Just, you may not have an official level 8. You might have an experienced kind of a level 8, but you'll get onto these courses.
And can you remember off the top of your head, or you can go to your notes if you want there, is that some of the courses that are available, what are the ones? You mentioned Bitcoin.
Blockchain.
Fortunate blockchain, I beg
blockchain.
Your pardon.
Stay away from Bitcoin for a while.
I was going to say, yeah. No, not for a while, forever. What else?
Yeah, compliance, there's ethics. They do have the diversity and inclusion, but the Institute of Bankers will have that list. And it need not necessarily be a master's. It could be a certificate. It could be a lesser course. But the master's was the one I chose to do.
And how long does that take?
Master's is part-time online for 2 years.
While you work, obviously.
While you're working. So I'm in the last 6 months of it now, and none of this is achievable without my beloved wife, Fleur, helping me along the way.
And also, the fact that the government pays for 90% of it?
Mine was 90%. It is dropping. I checked with MTU last night, but the lowest I've heard so far is 50%. So still, to get 50% of that taken care of. And then your employer may then look at it and see, can they help? Which is where Grant Thornton must get a shout out today, because they definitely walk the walk. And when I presented them with, you know, I could do this, government will take care of some, would you take care of the remainder? And they said, absolutely no problem. So it's the partner, Frankie Cronin, and my fellow Cork person, Director Emer Cotter, who runs all the learning and development. They're huge for staff development. There's courses every year. They'll give a cash reward for completing a certification. So it's in their interest, and they're happy to help their staff as well.
And that's your promotion guaranteed. So you go back two steps, because you mentioned twice so far that you had no degree.
Yeah.
And this is two, there are two different stories arising out of that. First of all, the fact that this course that you're talking about took you on without the degree.
Correct.
Discuss.
So way back when, the 90s, a time of great fun. I did accounting after school, straight into the professional exams. So it was the, what we would call the old style now.
Articles, was it? Or is that
articles, what it was, yeah. Called, so, yeah. So 2 years in college and then straight into it. But what I had done it because, you know, it seemed like a secure job. Parents thought it would be a great thing to do. I thought no different. I hadn't done accounting for my leaving. I hadn't done it in school. And very quickly into my contract after college, I realized it's not for me. And it was particularly kind of zoned in on auditing, which definitely isn't for me.
Few people have said that to me. What is it about auditing that is so boring?
No, it's not boring. It's just, I think you either like it or you don't. And it definitely wasn't for me. I love doing different things. I'm very curious about trying to do different things all the time. And I think my fear in my head was, would I get pigeonholed into doing this? So what I'd done is, I got through the professional 1 and 2, as they were known then, struggled through the professional 3 and completely hit a psychological wall for the finals. Got 1 or 2 of them, but couldn't get over the last 2. Tried it 2-3 times, went away, came back, couldn't get it. Said, I can't do this. Just not for me. So moved on to something else. But what I found then at the time, which made little difference now because of 20 odd years of working, is that because I hadn't finished them out, I didn't get the equivalent recognition in reverse. So if someone had come in, completed a degree, they would get up to, I think it was Prof 3 that time. And if you had a master's, maybe a master's, you get up to doing the finals. Everyone had to do the finals. But in reverse, it didn't work. So if I was going for a job, they'd say, do you have a degree? I'd say, no, I have this experience.
And they'd say, there's the door.
So, yeah, definitely one.
That's, I mean, it is utterly ridiculous, isn't it?
It is. And when you're kind of saying to someone, look, I have 4 years, well, yeah, back then it would have been 3-4 years of experience of a big 4 firm. And the answer is no, but you don't have a degree. You're kind of going, do you want someone with the degree or the experience? But that's the way it was. And that's why I'm kind of here, and I'm an advocate for the recognition of prior learning that gets skills on the job. And we were speaking earlier, you know, Stephen Kinsella and UL have almost resurrected this and fostered it. I can remember FOSS when I was growing up. FOSS were the apprenticeships. Now that was all the, you know, the people who were brilliant with their hands. It didn't necessarily extend to, you know, maybe accounting or stuff like that, but maybe it should.
And what should the government be doing? I mean, they've introduced these other new courses, but should we go back to apprenticeship four? They've knocked, I think I'm right in this, law, solicitors, I don't, you used to be able to do that by articles. You used to be able to do the accountancy by articles, etc. Like a sensible approach to...
Yeah, and particularly when you see UL is doing the software side of it. So to me, it applies equally. Now, I don't know what the more recent for law and accounting, but they were the two traditional ones. I think a long time ago, you had to pay them to be the apprentice. And when I was doing it, it was absolutely brilliant experience. I was barely 20 in the door of Coopers and Lybrand, what then became PwC. And I learned so much from 3-4 years, all the people around me, the job, what to do, what not to do. If you make a mistake, we all do.
You're told about it.
You're told about it, and yeah. You fix it. And you learn how to work with people, most importantly, learn to keep the clients happy. And I think the route in, there's so much pressure on people to do college, masters. I have a niece who's done a second master's.
And of course, in a way, now, okay, they're getting brighter, but it's also degrading the basic degree as well, because everybody needs to do a basic degree now, and now you have to do your master's. And if your niece is doing 2 masters, I mean, at what point do you say, no, hang on, that's
enough? Yeah, it is. So it's that combination of experience. And, you know, I haven't heard FOSS mentioned in a while. I know it's turned into Solace now, I think.
Yep, it is.
But I don't see much of that advertised, and maybe it doesn't affect me because, you know, I'm on the financial services side.
You see now, they are driving at the moment, there's an ad campaign looking for older, more experienced electricians, for example. They're trying to get, obviously we need any tradesperson for the building trade, and they are trying to do work on that side.
Yeah.
But look, the world has moved on so much from that. There must be 1,000 different types of jobs that could be done by way of apprenticeship.
And uses
kids
of people's
experience.
Kids are
using YouTube anyway, so...
Exactly. Like, I mean, I have a 9 and 5-year-old, and the 9-year-old, you know, shows me how to use YouTube. I'm in my late 40s, and I consider myself young, but they're so far faster than us on the social media side. But it's just to use the apprenticeship scheme, I think, push it more, revive it more. It doesn't have to be someone just in the trades. It could be our side of things as well. And particularly when the government, you'd raise your eyes in puzzlement with them from time to time. But when they have a big long list of courses, they will contribute to on your behalf to benefit the financial services sector and an employer and yourself. It's brilliant. Should be lauded more.
There's an election coming up. Maybe we might hear a bit more of it in that. And,
we're used to that.
Now, another thing that you're doing, because this is the day job, is risk and all of that area. Huge area, huge problem, cybersecurity, massive problem. I don't know, probably at this stage, every business is concerned about it. Should they be?
Yeah, and I think you can react to it or be proactive. AI has come along, it's not going to go away. I was doing part of it as part of one of my assignments in college, actually, and this is the benefit side. You get to access to research papers through MTU, that you're not going to get access to because they give it to you as part of the course, but you can see the advancements in 3, 6, 9 months. I mean, practical example is we've all heard of it. And then when I was going to do my assignment, I find myself asking ChatGPT a question in a very specific way, whereas you ask it to assume the role of a financial services person. So we've subliminally learned over the last 3 months how to ask ChatGPT a question, which tells you something. Everyone's adapting straight away.
Because we're being told that the question or the query is the most important thing, isn't it?
Yes, apparently the way you ask it. And the first iteration, I think, was it was fed information up to 2021, and now it's plugged into the internet. It has all the information. So the cybersecurity around that and companies reacting to their staff to say, you know, we don't mind you using it in a particular way if it gives benefit or value to an answer, but implications for people using it for clients. You know, you'd want to be very careful, and the cybersecurity around it. And you'd see all the news of lawyers in the US. I think there's a great example of getting quote in case law in court and the judge wondering where this came from. And it's from ChatGPT.
We had a lovely chit chat on our other podcast, The Fifth Court, about that, which was there were claims being made that some of the judgments in Ireland were being done by or based on AI. And there was wholesome refutation by the judges. We had judges in saying, not on my watch. So not at the moment.
Not
so
the moment.
What to expect? What should anybody in business, particularly SMEs, because they're the ones we're concerned about, what should they be looking out for in the next 3, 6, 9 months?
Well, I think it's to read everything you can, and maybe there's people in your company that can be the experts that you can ask them to train other people in it. It's not going to go away.
With a view to now, some people are using it for marketing, some are using it for research. What's your interest in that side?
Well, it'll be research for me for sure with the last 6 months of the master's in MTU. But I suppose it depends on your age group as well. I mean, I'd be very reluctant. There's plenty of information out there that I can get to use for my job, but you want to use it as a tool to help you as well. So that's the way we'll be looking at it. And then it's the cybersecurity around it, because once you ask the question, I believe it retains the information you asked it. Not sure if I have that right.
Well, if you haven't, it doesn't matter. But what am I to be concerned about there? That they know that my business is asking about, I don't know, so some aspect of maybe accounting or something. Is that it? And therefore, they could see a vulnerability there, that this company has an issue with its accounting or something?
It could be that, or else it's maybe it's more so that they are you giving it particular information about your company?
Yeah.
Not so much about, say, the accounting, but are you given, you wouldn't want to give away client information or anything like that. So.
Yeah. And can that be stopped? If you're asking the question, intuitively, you imagine we have 35 employees, they're paid on average 40,000 or something. Like you, that all has to be fed in, and you're saying that's sitting somewhere eventually.
It could be. I could be completely wrong now. I'm not the expert in this side of things. Yes, well. Yeah, we get a brief glimpse as one of the modules, but yeah, that's where the cyber security side, and I think the IT security and IT risk and control experts will kick in. And then you'll get regulators. I'm sure the GDPR regulators are watching very, very carefully.
And if you are, obviously you're doing this course with a view to the future, what's your concern or your interest in that in the future? What are you thinking is going to happen? You're reading your own tea leaves, if you like to put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, this course I'm doing is literally half finance and literally tech. So the tech isn't going to go away. It is a tool that's there to help us. Might as well jump on it and learn how to use that tool properly. And then be aware for ourselves as a firm and the clients, what I can get from that. That's the value I'd bring to GT. That's why they're happy to pay for the remainder of my course, because we can learn all the nuggets of wisdom that can help.
How hard is it to do? I mean, is it hours and hours? And is it stretching your little brain or your big brain? I would say big brain, my little brain.
It is hard, but we're on the downhill now in the last 6 months. I couldn't do it literally without my family.
How many hours? I mean, are all your weekends taken up, or all your summer holidays taken up, or whatever were holidays?
You get a break in the holidays. It's kind of the quarter four and quarter one are the big ones, quarter one, quarter two. The last semester for me has been the toughest by country mile, because work got busy. This particular course subjects were on data analytics, which I knew about, but it's using Power BI, so wrapping your head around that, and then cloud technology. Then there was 4 assignments in that. One of those assignments was split into 3, and then balancing that with the family and just making sure all that ticks along. So you absolutely do need the help of partner, spouse, whomever that will support you.
And you are working with a large organization, Grant Thornton. Do you think could a person running his, her own little business manage to do it?
I think it'd be tough. Like, I have huge respect. That's why I listen to the show and I hear all the stories of the companies that don't get the media all the time. They live it 24/7.
They do. They really, yeah, really do.
It's not even a lifestyle. There's no work-life balance. Lifestyle is too light a word to apply to what they do. It's literally just what they do. Could they do it? They'd probably have to be superhuman, but I think if their business was up and running, Maybe they could, but I've heard so many good people. There's probably people that can do 10 things, including running their own business as well as this course.
There are, and because people run a couple of businesses together as well, because they're all, it is a madness, you know, it's because that drive, and you couldn't, people say, oh, it's tough. Yes, it is tough, but it's also, they wouldn't have it any other which way.
No, and this was like, this is a personal satisfaction to me to kind of lay the ghost of not having the degree. It was just something I wanted.
It has obsessed you, hasn't it?
Well, not madly over that length of time, but it is important for myself to do it. And then when I saw a course that the modules were what jumped out at me is hugely practical for my job and something interesting to learn. And that's why, you know, I think more people should know about it.
And that's why you are here. And if anybody is looking for those, you found it, as you say, at the bottom of an article. Where does one go, do you know, to actually look into it in any greater detail? You're with MTU.
Yes.
But I presume the other TUs are doing something similar.
It's definitely in Munster Technological University and Atlantic TU as well.
Technical
University,
isn't it?
Yes, all the names have changed recently, so we've had to wrap our heads around that. I think Southeast does something similar.
Would you say Waterford?
And Carlo, don't forget.
Yeah.
I think they do something similar. I'm not sure if it's the exact same, but all the information is, I'll send you the link. It's all in the back of a financial services strategy report from the Department of Finance.
And when Brian says he's going to send you a link, he will send me a link because, as I said, October 2021, and you also have sent me links to various other businesses that I will be following up with. But I had to get you in, first of all, October 2021.
Well, that's good. And
it's a long time.
It is a long time.
And I have to throw myself on the ground. Apologies to have it so long to get there. You know that we have a final question, because I did remind you again.
Yes.
Is, who would Brian O'Donoghue hire in a heartbeat?
Well, I'll give you two names.
You may give me many.
One is Bobby Healy of Mana. I'm just absolutely fascinated by, you know, the vision. And you'd hear Pat Phelan as well, another Corkman, mention it of... Something for schools, you know, is the training there to think outside of Ireland and think with that huge vision. And Mana for me is, when Bobby is driving along, what made him go, you know, let's do drones globally.
Yeah. I've interviewed him, not on the show yet, but I've done a couple of MC jobs with him. And he is incredible. It's just a big,
it's just
big
fascinating to watch. And there's a plug there as well for an old terminal going unused in Cork Airport, Bobby, that you can have a launch site from.
Well, that's good, because I see that he's actively, he has launched Blanchard Sound effectively, and the entire of the US now has gone drone mad, and not just individuals, but I'm talking about businesses. Amazon, I think, is going to do an awful lot of its delivery by drone. So it's, I won't even say it's the future, it's now.
And I think the IAA here, if I have them right, the aviation regulator has set out, and I probably worked with Bobby to set out the regulations around it. So that's a proactive regulator, which is fantastic.
I also had a lady, before you go to your second choice, had a lady on, Julie Garland. She was on with us probably a year ago, if you anybody wants to listen back. And she predicted that for the Ryder Cup, is it in Adair in 2027? She says we will have vertical takeoff and landing for the players at that stage. And that is now not the future. That's just a fact of life. So
that's
there.
Mad.
I love that kind of stuff. Anyway, so Bobby Healy, you're hired anyway. That's if he's if he hasn't got a lot of more things on his plate. And so you have a second choice.
Yeah, there's lots of great people I worked with in PwC. And if I give one name, I'll have to give all of them. But a separate chap that I worked with in Matchbook, the sports book betting exchange, Cian Nugent is his name. He's currently the COO and I think managing director of Spotlight Sports Group, which was the Racing Post. Cian was COO and very effective, and I think
I saw them. I didn't know there was any connection, and I did see them, and it was somebody that I was, in fact, if you'd like to come along and be on the show, because it is an area of huge interest of mine, obviously anything to do with media.
Yeah,
so I'd love to have.
He went from the sports betting side and the exchange to do that, and I think after a year or two, he had gotten some other promotion. Cian did an Ironman for the crack. So that would tell you the drive and the man. But I kind of really admired the way he was the CEO in Matchbook. So I think he'd be a great CEO.
And one, if you have an interest and if you have a knowledge about businesses, not specifically Matchbook, one day the regulator is going to make it very difficult for that industry. And by regulator, a world regulator.
Well, yeah, well, the Irish gambling regulator has to come along first. I think it's halfway through the Dáil, marching with interest. The plan is there. They have a framework. I was at a meeting with the Department of Justice, I think Farmley House, is it? Yeah. A couple of years ago, where they had operators and people in, and they had gone around the world kind of looking at the regulators and taking the best that they liked out of that. So it's only a matter of when it happens. But yeah, it's when it happens is the key.
There's a lot of lobbying going on by one side in particular.
Don't know anything about that now, Conal. Steering miles away from that.
When you pass, which you will be passing in 6 months' time, you may become a regulator. How about that? Would you like to be a regulator?
I don't know. That would be a big question.
I think that's a yes.
I've both sides.
A Baltimore, you'd have a Baltimore be able to beat the bejesus out of them.
No, it's not about that. I think you have to work with people. I think you can still be an enforcer and you can still match people to what the regulations and the law should be, but you can equally have a conversation. I think that's a better way to go.
Okay. Brian, thanks so much for coming into us. That's Brian O'Donoghue. And thanks also for being a huge supporter and it's open to anybody on LinkedIn, is where Brian got me, to send on suggestions, and you can promote yourself if you want to come along. You didn't. Brian did not. I said, Brian, would you come along? And he did very kindly. But you have been sending me through, I don't know how many people that, and you've also, did I see, Grant Thornton backed one of the companies that you were promoting. But you see, again, it's going back a year or two, so I can't even remember. But we will have all of them on. Brian, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thanks, Conal.
That Great Business Show.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
The World Affairs Council is a curious US not-for-profit organization that is, for the most part, probably unknown to most Irish people. It brings top experts and leaders in their fields to engage directly with all types of audiences, including those in business. I'm not aware of this type of forum existing in Ireland. And we thought it was a nice idea that could be adopted because great ideas come from great chats. Megan Clark-Torrey is CEO of the World Affairs Council of Connecticut. And I'm going to say welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you so much, Conal. It's an honor to be here with you in person.
The World Affairs Council. It sounds huge, but I don't know what it does.
So we are a nonprofit, as you said, an organization that began in 1924. So we celebrate our centennial next year. Our mission is to engage our community on all kinds of global issues. And that's everything from defense and security to international business to international humanitarian issues.
And what is the goal? Who are you trying to educate? Who are you trying to engage with? You say everybody, but I mean, what is your core audience?
Yeah, really the community at large, but people that are very interested in engaging in the world. We know that we live in a globalized atmosphere. We know that the world is a very complicated and complex place, particularly right now, particularly as we sit here today. And our mission is to help our community, help the citizens of the state of Connecticut understand and navigate the complex global world we live in.
But you are talking there of Connecticut, but you're a national or a states-wide organization, correct? Yeah?
Absolutely. There are 90 World Affairs Councils across the United States. I happen to sit on the board of directors for the World Affairs Councils of America. And so we work very hard to leverage our content as a nationwide organization. In fact, tomorrow night we have an event where we'll be working with councils all across the country, from California to Texas to New Mexico.
And as you know, because you do know about That Great Business Show, we are a business podcast. What do you do for businesses and how does it affect business?
Absolutely. That is one of our core focuses, in engaging with Connecticut businesses, because Connecticut is inherently a very global place. About $24 billion of our economy just here in the state of Connecticut comes from other places in the world, comes from international business transactions. And about 150,000 people in Connecticut work for a business that is headquartered outside of the United States. So within our core work, we work with businesses across the state of Connecticut to partner with them on bringing international business issues to a community forum, be it, you know, right now we're working on something on AUKUS, right? So Connecticut is ground zero for the business that's being done in making those submarines that will sort of ultimately reach the goals of the AUKUS deal.
And what exactly, give me a case study as to how you engage and what are you trying to achieve with that? You have these chats and chat is good, but what does it achieve?
Right. So what we're doing is empowering our citizens and empowering our businesses to achieve more, to reach more, to be better global citizens, and to hopefully connect. When we're talking about, let's talk about our connections with Connecticut and Ireland, which are deep and long-lasting. And we do have, you know, again, this year, the return of a flight that's direct from Hartford to Dublin.
Hooray!
Which we're all excited about. And if you haven't taken it, it's wonderful to clear TSA in Dublin and walk off the plane in Hartford.
People do not understand how nice that is.
It's amazing.
We came off the flight and I said, hang on a second, where's customs? Oh, we did that. It's great. It really is good.
Yeah, especially for, you know, us here in Connecticut who live here, when you're in your car and you're home in 20 minutes. It's the best thing. But one of the things that we hope to continue doing is making deeper connections between businesses in Connecticut and businesses in Ireland.
And what would you like? Because the forum is open. The floor is yours.
I would love to see some, you know, more joint ventures, more business partnerships that are occurring on both sides of the ocean.
More case studies, please. Tell me, how would that work and who would it benefit?
Right. So we know that Connecticut is very big in, you know, medical device technology, as you are as well in Ireland, right?
Because the Connecticut companies are over in Ireland.
Right. So that's a perfect example of how we're working together, how we continue to work together, how we can maximize and leverage our relationships.
And how much more, which other ways could we, maybe That Great Business Show, help you in doing that?
One thing as a World Affairs Council that we really believe in is sort of citizen diplomacy. And I think that that extends to the business community and sort of citizen business diplomacy. And that really is fundamentally, the more we know about each other, the more we interact with each other, the more opportunities we create.
Trade is good.
Absolutely.
So why is there no, since the word world is in there, why is there not a World Trade Council in Ireland?
So I'll ask you, why isn't there a world?
But how does one go about it? Or who owns it? It's not for profit.
Absolutely. You know, what you need is a very interested group of people who want to maybe create a group that it wants to engage in the world.
But typically, who does it? Who's the scout leader?
So it's really interesting. Even though my organization turns 100, and I haven't been there all 100 years, sometimes I feel like I have. So I know it was created by, you know, in 1924 at a time post-World War I that the world was turning and looking, the U.S. in particular was looking inward. And there was a really engaged group of people that said, you know what, that's not the future. The future is learning and engaging in the world. And so we had...
And we're all in favor of this, but tell me, if there is somebody listening, people listening, there would be many, who might say, do you know what? I wouldn't mind doing that in Ireland. Yeah. And who do you apply to?
So I would say if anyone is interested, contact me. I'd love to put you in connection with our national network, with anyone, with myself who can help sort of direct and guide. I'm not necessarily familiar with the nonprofit laws in Ireland, but I imagine they might be similar to how they work here in how you might want to create a group that is focused on engaging across cultures and across nations.
And funding is always an issue. Do you fund across the world? If people listening are saying, Okay, good idea, nice idea. But do I have to put my hands into my own pocket?
So our funding structure is sort of varied, right? So we have membership, we have grants, and then we have the local community, both businesses and individuals that support what we do. And it works. It's worked so far for 100 years.
Over those 100 years, what are the wins? What wins can you point to and say, this would not have happened without the council?
Well, it's so interesting as we look back on our history and sort of the high level people that we've brought in, everyone from former presidents to secretaries of state to secretaries of defense. But what I've been able to see is when we sort of bring representatives from around the world into Connecticut businesses and to see how that works, whether it was bringing in the ambassador of Vietnam to stand literally inside an A380 engine and to see that those relationships continue to grow, to bring a group of people from Colombia to see some helicopters and to see that those relationships continue. So I think it's really interesting from my perspective to see when we can really get those hands-on engagements.
I'm sure you're not familiar with the word Rolodex. You're way too young for that. But you know what I mean. It's the access to these people. Is that one of the things that you have, that you actually can pick up a phone and say, dear Secretary of State, former, would you like to come and speak to such and such a forum?
So yes and no, right? So we do have a lot of connections and we have a very sort of loyal and deep-seated public, but also a really good reputation for being a very high-quality organization that is doing good work. And so that affords us some very good contacts in our Rolodex.
Do they respond? I keep thinking Ireland.
You think I just could call up Anthony Blinken and say, hey, sir, do you want to come?
That type of thing. I mean, so, if I were sitting in Dublin and I were looking for somebody of a huge note or a huge reputation, and I say I'm with the World Affairs Council, do they respond? Do they pick up the phone?
So I do know that World Affairs Councils do have a good reputation. And most often you'll get someone to say, hey, let's engage.
And is one council better than another? In other words, is Connecticut better than the one in somewhere else?
No, I'm always going to say that our council is the best and the greatest, but the reality is each council around the country sort of reflects the communities in which they operate. So you might find councils in Texas doing a little bit more on immigration than maybe you'll find in, North Carolina. You will see a little bit more being done in tech in Silicon Valley in San Francisco.
And in your one in Connecticut, what are you majoring on?
Defense and security.
Okay. So if somebody wants to promote that or understand that better or whatever, you have the contacts.
Yeah.
And we can give them your phone number. Typically, if you were to ask for a CV of somebody who wanted to set up a unit in Ireland, what should they have as their CV in their background?
So I think most importantly is an interest, because that passion has to exist. And working for a nonprofit is hard, dedicated work. And if you don't love what you're doing, if you don't believe in the mission, it's not necessarily worth it. So I would say if someone has the passion, if someone has international background, whether it's diplomacy, international business, anything like that, I think that will set you up well. But again, I think you just have to sincerely believe that, you want to make the world a better place.
And should that person be, I'm going to use the word delicately here now, a veteran, in other words, old or young? I mean, could a young person decide this is a great idea, I'm going to take this by the scruff and run with it?
Absolutely. It could be anyone.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Hopefully we'll get some response to that and we'll send them on to you. There is a final question, and I hope you got the email about this, that we'd ask all of her. She's got terror in her eyes. I don't think you have. The hire in a heartbeat. Did you receive an email about a hire in a heartbeat? I'm going to ask you, who would you hire in a heartbeat if you had anybody at all to choose from? I read your CV and I saw, did I see Henry Kissinger as one of your big interests in life?
Yeah.
Okay. So would you hire him in a heartbeat if you could, or?
So as someone who has a specialization in defense and security, I'd hire any veteran in a heartbeat. Okay. I really believe in what our United States military does around the world, that they are some of the best and brightest. And anytime I have an opportunity to hire a veteran, I will. So maybe the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General C.Q. Brown.
Okay, that's a good answer. Megan Clark Turing of the World Affairs Council in Connecticut. Not the World Affairs Council, it's just the Connecticut one. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you so much, Connell.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com.
That Great Business Show.
And that's it for episode 174 of That Great Business Show. Great business insights and inspiration. All thanks to our lovely sponsor, De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best shaving oil. And I know, I've tried the others, but De Facto is the only one I continue to use. Remember to sign up for email updates and we'll send you your own personal copy of the podcast at thatgreatbusinessshow.com. Do share, do like, and do give us 5-star reviews. It really does help. Advertise with us on That Great Business Show to engage with our incredible audience of entrepreneurs, business owners, business wannabes, and investors. We record at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where today's studio engineer is Alison O'Dwyer. Later, the dynamic duo of studio manager Peter Rice and post-production engineer Neil Horner ensure we remain the world's best-sounding business podcast. So from me, Conall O'Moran, Bich to you all of a slant time.